Good morning, everyone. This is from Dancing with Shiva, Sloka 70. How can peace on earth be achieved? Peace is a reflection of spiritual consciousness. It begins within each person and extends to the home, neighborhood, nation, and beyond. Comes when the higher nature takes charge of the lower nature. Pretty simple. I remember at the Australia Perth Kumbhabhishekam, I included something on that in my talk, as there were members of the government there, Western Australia government. I wanted to make a point that they would clearly understand how Hindus look at the importance of the temple. That was the idea. Okay, we're building a temple or opening a temple. What's the importance of it to the Hindu community? So I did this same idea. It helps the individual be more peaceful. Having a temple you can go to helps you be a more peaceful person. Basic idea of having a temple. Life can challenge us, and we lose our center, become disturbed about this and that. If there's a temple we can go to, it's easier to regain our center, pull ourselves back together, than if we don't have one. And if things are going well, then it helps us go more deeply inside ourselves, into our soul nature. It will bring greater peace to the individual. And what happens when the individuals are more peaceful? The home is more harmonious. If you have individuals who aren't peaceful, they won't create a harmonious home. So we have to have peace in the individual in order for the home to be harmonious. Even if just one of the two spouses is harmonious, the other one may not be able to draw him or her into the argument. Maybe an argument of one person, if at least one person is harmonious. Ideally, both are harmonious. So we have harmony in the home, greater harmony in the home. And when we have greater harmony in the home, as this lesson points out, it leads to greater tolerance in the community. Because it's easy to find fault with others and blame thing on other people when we ourselves are disturbed. We're looking for a scapegoat. So it helps the whole community, just having a place of worship for Hindus. The whole community will be a little more tolerant. More harmony in the home, less domestic violence calls, save on money. So it definitely, but it starts with the individual. And, you know, when you hear these statements about world peace, oh, I want world peace, this and that, they don't start with the individual usually. They're doing something outside. And that's not very effective because it's like raking the leaves here, you know, all the leaves, oh, it's perfect. The path is totally clean. 2 days later, it's covered with leaves again, right? So it's, if you try and create world peace externally, it can't last. It's like trying to straighten the dog's tail, as Yogaswami liked to say. You know, it just will revert to the way it was because there's no basis for it. Whereas if you start with the individuals and they keep remaining peaceful, then you have a permanent change as long as they keep seeking peace on a daily basis. Doing some research in the Guru Chronicles, the story of our line of gurus, I was looking for something on Yogaswami for a PowerPoint presentation I was doing, and I came across this story, which I had forgotten about. So I thought I'd share it. Chenkaladi Sibathondan Center is directed towards service. In the plan drawn up according to Yogaswami's wishes, there was another temple-like structure on the western side. This was to be used to house celibate students and recluses. Recluses who had religious knowledge and knowledge of other arts, who were well experienced and of good conduct, were to reside there and teach others like them. Fertile fields were obtained in which the acolytes were to work hard, cultivate food, and thus be useful to others. This Sivathondu would help in getting rid of their egoism, helping them to forget the I and live in unison with the we. Swami said that men who grow in this atmosphere will have bodies that exude good religious conduct and faces exuding the strength of mental peace. He visualized them meditating in the hall under the trees amidst the fields, guiding the world through their silence while sitting, walking, and working. The fulfillment of this idea of Yoga Swamis depends on those who are prepared to sacrifice themselves fully in the pursuit of self-realization. Yoga Swami expressed that it is not the aim of the Siva Thondon to indulge in propaganda, to press people, or to go about lecturing. Oh, it's the same idea, but in a different sense. We're talking about how the individual, by being peaceful, makes the whole more harmonious, which makes the community more tolerant. So this is saying, if you have a monastery like that, you're influencing people likewise. Guiding the world through their silence while sitting, walking, and working, meaning the vibration of the monastery that they would create by just being there, doing their meditation and their service and all, would uplift others, particularly those who knew of its existence. Oh, it's an interesting idea that just by having a place with a religious vibration, you can uplift. You don't have to run around and meet everybody in person and talk. So when I read that, it reminded me of a verse in the Shastras, Saivite Shastras we call it. It's a book that describes the monastery. It said a similar thing. As is the first part of the sentence isn't here. As is the mere existence of the Saiva Siddhanta Yoga order enough to fulfill the purpose of the order. Anything done outside of the emanation of darshan, that is of the nature of grace. In other words, the primary activity here at Kwayadinam is simply creating the vibration. In the terminology of Saivite Shastras, it's the darshan, having a strong darshan or having a strong inner vibration. That's the primary task. What does my kulam do? It creates the inner vibration. It uplifts those who are attuned to the monastery. You know, I think that's a good answer to the question. We had a young man here recently who was interested in monastic life, and he was looking at it from the viewpoint of a common pattern in India. You go to a monastery for a few years, maybe 6 years, get trained, become a Swami, and then go off on your own and teach. Monastery of one. There you are, off in the world, one person teaching. We kind of had that pattern in mind, which is natural. It happens a lot in India, even where it's not supposed to. It's so strong, that idea of just going off on your own. Whereas here, the idea is to stay together, not to do anything in particular other than to create a strong vibration. If there's time to do something else after that, we can do that too, but first of all, we have to create the vibration. People who come here should feel the vibration, which they do. You know, we've been here since 1970, so that's 46 years as of February. Long time. As people ask, this is a beautiful place, I say, yes, we've been here 46 years, and it still looks that way to us too. Every day is beautiful in a different way. Sometimes it rains beautifully, sometimes it's sunny beautifully. So that's the idea, and very important point, that the primary purpose of the Adinam here is to create a strong inner vibration. And that in itself influences the lives of anyone who's connected to it. That's the point. That's called the second shakti, second darshan, radiating out and influencing those who are connected. So they're naturally connected, naturally uplifted, and their karmas go more smoothly as long as the vibration here is strong. So other parts of the Shastras say interesting things. In the order's history, early in the order's history, The darshan came strong and almost disappeared at times. The inner force field. Come into the temple, you can't feel it. But later, as each individual adjusted himself to the shastric flow, the darshan became constant, strong, and steady. Only when the physical plane permeates orderliness and does not precipitate confusion can the darshan flow in this extreme continuity. Next chapter talks about keeping the place clean, which I won't read. But that's interesting. You know, in the early years, the darshan was strong and then would almost go away. Oh, I remember a story on that long, long ago, far, far away story, when we first started in San Francisco Center. Gurudeva wasn't living there during the week. He's living somewhere else. So he'd come there for the weekend activities, and then he'd go away on Monday. So the vibration was, you know, with these up there on Sunday, you know, flying high, and then at Monday after he went, boom. It all went away. Because it was all his vibration. The place didn't have a vibration of its own, and the other monks were just beginners, so they couldn't create a vibration. So totally dependent on him. But here it's not dependent on any one individual. It's strong enough, it's well established enough that it just keeps going as long as we do our pujas every day, our meditations, and so forth. Vibration is very strong. So there's one last statement on that. The darshan was strong and fulfilled its purpose. A new Saivite culture began to bloom surrounding each monastery as the darshan more and more fulfilled its purpose of stabilizing the intensity of Saivism in the minds of the families and surrounding community. This next sentence is the one I wanted. Even other religions, such as Buddhism, began to flourish in the darshan radiations from the Saivite monasteries. Great harmony was felt by all under and guided by the systematic dissemination of encouragement and discipline through the monastery senior group. Isn't that interesting? Even Buddhism gets a benefit from us. It's not really that different. We had some Thai Buddhists. Did they come and have the ceremony? The Thai Buddhists? Yes, the Thai Buddhists in Thailand. The Thai people go to both Buddhist temples and Hindu temples. And the story in Hinduism today done by our correspondent was, when asked, they said, well, we go to the Buddhist temple for purely spiritual benefits, but we go to the Hindu temple because the gods help us in our daily life. So they worship Ganesha for material benefit. So they're very used to worshiping in Hindu temples, and there's no Thai Buddhist place on the island, and they're closer to Hinduism than they are to Japanese Buddhism. So they come here occasionally for ceremonies. So this was for the birth of a new baby, like a naming ceremony. But we just gave an archana. You know, we don't want to give her Namakarana. Then the question comes up, is the baby Buddhist or Hindu? That's a good question. I don't know the answer. If they attend an archana, we're safe, you know. The baby is not Hindu. So, have a wonderful day. Om Namah Shivaya.